Bye, Stuart.
Bye, Stuart.
Bye. I was having computer problems, everyone, and
I thought maybe we could capture a little bit of Stuart. Leah.
He's out.
He's out.
You might record, he's like, and that's my cue to go.
And goodbye. I'm upset about our drink choice.
I'm upset that you still have a format shirt on.
I am always. Always.
What did you do for your wackadoodle drink?
So, yeah. So, Leah had this brilliant idea, which I was like, yeah, to do a ridiculous drink, right? And I was like, I don't know what to do. And so, I have this. We've used it before. It's a, like, recipe book for drinks, for cocktails that's, like, all based on.
I told you to make up a wacky cocktail and you read a book. That's the most nerdy thing you've ever said to me.
Well, I could.
Also, I have to tell all of our listeners before she keeps on that when we first came on, and I've known Christy now for like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
She said, I can't prop it up. And I was like, ma'am. I hadn't even talked that much and she was on it.
It was already happening. So it's like that. It's the feminist cocktail book we've used before.
Yep.
And I was just like, maybe I'll, because I was like staring at all of my options and I couldn't think of anything. And there was one for Iris Apple, who's the fashion designer. And I was like, that sounds weird. But do you want to know what it is? It is 2 shots of Campari and 6 shots of club soda. And that's it.
That's why you said prop it up.
It's gonna be so gross.
Well, that's part of it. So the background is that I once, well, we've all, if you're from the South and probably elsewhere, we call it hunch punch. You know, you're at a empty, as they say in the Scots, but it's basically you're at a house party or something and you run out of things. I had an ex who used to mix liquor with tea when we ran out of things, like actual tea that
you I do that with. Just regularly. That's like a
Long Island iced tea, I guess. But
yeah, or like a pretend hot toddy if it's hot.
I suppose at the time it felt strange, maybe because it was like warm tea. There was no ice, but whatever. He was also Irish, so what do you expect? So we would do hunch punches. You get all the stuff that you have together, whatever. So I was at a friend's house once in Athens, Georgia. Boop. That should tell you everything you need to know because we were in college. And so we just combined, but we didn't have any mixers. So we just combined non-mixers. And we called it the Leah. And it was disgusting.
Yeah.
We drank it anyway. So I was like, why don't we create, because of the whimsical topic of today, why don't we create something? Another thing we created in college is what I'm drinking, which is called the Hangover Helper. Like Hamburger Helper.
Yeah.
So, honestly, it's not much better than your thing. It's about, I mean, as many shots as you want. There's 2 in there now of whatever, usually vodka.
Okay.
Because that was the cheapest and that's what's there.
Yeah.
And then Gatorade.
Oh, God. That's not totally dissimilar to the vodka Crystal Lights I used to drink. But they were mostly just like. It was just like a cup of vodka and then you dump the Crystal Light in.
Right, but Gatorade is for sports people.
I know. Like, it is helping, but it is still disgusting.
So
you know.
The Hangover Helper.
Yours?
We swore by it. So.
We would drink Pedialyte. We would just like have
this
a bottle.
Booze. This is Pedialyte with booze.
With booze.
Because you're preempting what we'll need Pedialyte for.
No, I knew people who would do that though. They would they would mix some views into the Pedialyte and they'd be like,
same thing. Yeah.
Good to go. And I was like, yeah, same. I'm just going to drink water, but.
That's the elephant in the room. the liquid elephant in the room is, could have just drank water.
We could just drink water. But like, I don't know. This is going to be gross. Also, it's huge.
Cheers.
Cheers. Oh,
what is the red?
It's the Campari.
Mm. Yeah, I had Campari once.
Oh my God, it's disgusting. Iris, this drink
mine's strong, but okay. I mean, it's Gatorade and vodka. It tastes like if your Gatorade went bad, basically.
I do not enjoy
Christy's face right now.
It's not my favorite drink we've ever had. Ugh. Speaking I'm gonna of, hate it.
It's not, well, no, it's not supposed to be. That's why it's the made up wacky drink. At least I didn't just put all the liquor into one thing. I didn't do the Leah.
You didn't do the Leah. We would do that, but it was a part of a game, King's Cup. We would just play King's Cup, where everybody just pours their alcohol into a cup and somebody has to drink it.
Yeah.
But, like, the loser had to drink it. I also don't remember any of the other...
We were all losers in this game.
A collection of losers.
You didn't get strep throat, though, because you didn't have... You could do it from the bottle. You didn't have to do it from other people's cups. We had that on our side. That's but, you know, it was...
I saw... Somebody sent me... Who sent this to me? Somebody sent me an Instagram video where this woman... I don't... Tell me if it was you. Was explaining that Gen Z knows drinks, but millennials know drinking. Yeah. Because we were like... How do we get wasted as cheap as possible? And Gen Z is like, let's make a fancy cocktail. And like has their one fancy cocktail. But we were like balls to the wall, like give me that jungle juice in a vat, you know, or the Everclear.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, just straight.
In Georgia, we had something. It's a Savannah drink called Suffolk Punch.
Okay.
It's also a brewery now, but I think it was called... No, Artillery Punch. Artillery Punch is what it was called. And it's from Savannah. So I got confused by the brewery. Artillery Punch. And those of you who've been to Savannah, I'm going to get Christy in Savannah. But it's basically Hunch Punch, but it was a Prohibition drink.
So yes.
It's like they had just a little bit of fruit punch and then just like a whole bunch. It's kind of like Hunch Punch, but it's Artillery Punch. And it's a whole bunch of... liquor, and I'm telling you, Christy, it will knock your socks off. So people on River Street, which is like the Bourbon Street basically of Savannah, have differing versions of it, but there's just one place that you go and it's special.
This drink
you may not might be worse after this. You might die.
I might die. This drink might be worse than the Redneck Martini. I'm just gonna tell you right now. Like
we need to tell Trip ASAP.
I know. This is the worst thing I think I've ever had. And it's huge. Look at this glass.
The glass was a choice.
Well, I had a smaller glass, but it didn't, it was eyeball glass, but I couldn't put enough shots of the soda water in. And I was like, I don't want to drink straight Campari. Like, that sounds terrible. So
that's what you're doing anyway.
Everything just... It was a real snowball of a bad situation is what happened.
It's soda water too. Like, it's not exactly like going to mask a lot of that.
I know. It's not helping at all. And I just have a pint of it to drink.
Guys, we're here. We're prepping our livers for Theology Beer Camp.
We're getting ready for Theology Beer Camp. This is Theology on the Rock, by the way.
My one of two Theology on the Rock shirts. Stuart made me and Christy two. So we have one each.
We have one each.
I have my God Pods.
Yes. I love it. I love it.
This is the return of the God Pods. So.
Was that last year? I lost all of my cups. I have yet to keep a Theology Beer Camp souvenir cup.
Well, I told you this one's not mine. It still remains Derek. It's still Derek's,
but at least it's with you.
Derek. To come and fetch it. Although your name is fading, so Derek, one day it will be gone. And
someday it won't be Derek's anymore. It will be officially Leah's. I do love their
name and marker.
Our shirts are pretty great, though.
Stuart did a good job. More, I think they are. Good. They say Theology on the Rocks with our little symbol, and then Theology Best Done Over Drinks, which I think is pretty cool. So we're going to beer camp. It's in Minnesota, and
St. Paul.
Huh.
It's my first trip to Minnesota.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, we're excited.
We're so excited.
Just like this Campari drink.
At least it's not Ohio, Christy. At least it's not Ohio. So, although there is also Florida trip, hear us when we say there are places we could go. And I know Florida, okay, whatever. New Orleans seems a good spot.
Right? Next year.
A little warmer.
In somewhere cool.
I'm trying to think of not a controversial place. It's warm in the winter and it's really hard. It's getting real hard for me to think
New Mexico. We could go to southern New Mexico. It's a blue state. There's nothing there. We'll hate it, but it's warm.
We'll get good food, maybe.
They have good food. New Mexican food is the best.
You heard it here first, unless you live in New Mexico and it's not first for you.
It's not first. It's not at all a controversial statement if you live in New Mexico, but...
So yeah, I've not been to Minnesota.
Shout out to our New
Mexico. I don't tend to venture above the Mason-Dixon ring.
Here's how much I love you all, is that I have, for most of my life, said that I will never go to Minnesota because it's too far north. I was like, I have no desire. You cannot get me into that state or any of those, like, the top states other than Oregon. Mm-hmm. Washington, which one's on top?
Oregon Washington. Is at war.
I've been to Washington.
Don't you know Portland is a war-torn...
Portland is... Have you seen the people in the blow-up Halloween costumes dancing? Yes. I love it so much.
I love the Portland's the greatest. Just, like, war torn, and they're like eating bagels and drinking shots of coffee.
You're just being Portland.
Drum circles everywhere.
Washington. I've been to Washington. That's at the top. And that's it. I was like, done, close enough. But now I'm going to Minnesota and I'm breaking my no northern states rule.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. But we're excited.
We are.
Because we get to hang out for one thing, but also. We get to drink and talk about theology, and we're doing a lot of fun stuff, which we're going to talk about, and then we're going to segue into the topic of today. But I do want to highlight some of the things we'll be doing at Beer Camp. the Hot Wings Challenge, which our hot wings sauces, Christy will be so excited. Stuart almost forgot to order them, Christy. What would we have
done? I was secretly hoping.
There's like a fall, like Oktoberfest festival happening, and we're going to be doing the hot ones in there because
the festival.
We packed out the room the last time. It was
so more people have chances. And as per usual, if you want to ask a question, send it our way. Give it to us at Beer Camp. You can DM us, or you can hand it to us on a piece of paper, or.
We did get a...
If you are lucky enough to have our phone numbers, you can text it to us.
That's true. We're in a couple chats. Myron did send us a question, which we didn't include, which was who would win in a fight between Christy and Leah, our friend Myron Penner.
Did we not include that? I think it was just too obvious of an answer.
I'm drunk enough. You could probably push me down. But...
That's true. I could... I'm stealthy. If I use stealth. Here's the problem is that when I was a child, my siblings were full grown, but they were still older siblings. But what they would do, instead of like it being anywhere near a fair fight, I would just get thrown between my brothers or down the stairs or whatnot.
You also didn't play like sports. I mean, you did ballet, which I'm not arguing about the physicality. Hear me out. You didn't play sports where another human was wanting to punch you to get a ball, did you?
I mean, I didn't. I did play field hockey for a minute.
Okay, and that's punching. Punching.
But no, it was more that like my instincts were to curl up into a ball because then the brothers had a harder time throwing me.
Yeah. I mean, it's good defensive. If a bear attacks you, I've heard that's what you're supposed to do.
I'm like a hedgehog or an armadillo. I'm just going to like... Okay. Oh, only grizzly bears.
Okay. Good to know. Well, I'm pretty scrappy. But I'm also very easily persuaded to not fight. So if you like talk to me or say, then I'll be like, okay, I don't want to fight anymore. But if you're committed to it and you come at me, bro, then
we're
going to tussle. I don't know where this... conversation came from. Oh, Myron. Thanks, Myron, for your question. We have now answered your question. I was like, why are Christy and I talking about fighting each other again?
Why are we talking about fighting each other when we have other
supporting women? Stop.
We have other better people to fight.
We sure do. It's called the patriarchy.
It's the patriarchy. But we're excited
that are coming to Beer Camp.
Right? All of those men who think there's some hot stuff and are bragging all over the internet. are going to get taken down.
So we're doing
hot ones.
And then we're doing a, I'm going to leave the humor one to last. I am doing a panel with some folks about liberation theology, and you can listen to the videos if you have signed up. I still have my final one to do. I'm not a procrastinator. Don't worry.
You're going to be fine.
even your professors are procrastinators. In fact, we're worse, I would argue.
We're the worst at procrastinating.
I had, this is just shows you, I had a certain amount of papers for AR Southeast, of which I am president-elect, but my duty this year is to organize papers. The day of the deadline, I got about half of my original. The day of the deadline that we extended, I got double my original that I started with. So throughout the whole process, I got double that on the 6th, which was the extended deadline.
Including one from me.
Including yours.
Look, so it's not that academia rewards procrastination, but it does also teach you to procrastinate.
Well, it's a lot of self-motivation, and like, let's be real, that's hard in life.
It's a lot of self-motivation, but it's also just like a complete and total lack of consequences.
Lack of consequences, and you're not getting paid. I was complaining to Christy. I was
You're not getting paid.
It's killing me.
But like, it's, you know, when my students are like, I have to turn this in late, and I'm like, no, because in the real world, blah, blah, blah is going to happen. But this is the problem, is that for academics, that's not true.
True. Our real world is not.
Like, our real world.
If he doesn't do something, it's actual consequences.
There's actual consequences. And when we don't do something on time, the deadline gets extended.
It sure doesn't. And we did.
And then we do it. And then we go, oh, great. I was talking, because this happens every year, the AAR extends the deadline for the call for papers. And somebody said, why don't they just give us the like real deadline? And I was like, because no one would do it then either. The only reason that we're getting stuff in by the extended deadline is because they told us the first deadline start. We're basically just a collection of your friends. Like your friends that you have to tell an early time to, that's a lie. That's all of academia.
That is. That's your. I'm in the shower. I'm in the car. That's like me now.
I'm just like, you can't tell us the real time. You have to tell us a fake time.
100%.
So
we're doing that. I'm doing that panel, which will be really fun. I'm excited about that. And I'm going to talk a little bit about my book in that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Christy and I are on the God Pod stage with a friend that we don't know yet, but that will be our best friend by the end.
Well, I'm so excited to be best friends with him.
And he wrote a book, Rolf. Would you remember his last name?
I don't. Nope.
He's at Luther Seminary. I do know that.
Yes.
So Rolf, hello. Welcome. He wrote a book on humor and theology. And so we're going to talk, you know, all of you know, I mean, I think I've mentioned it a couple times, that I want to do Rocky Horror. And it's about Monty Python, but we're going to talk about humor and how we deal, because they both have 50th anniversaries this year.
They do. So
we're going to incorporate that. Christy and I brainstormed that in like 1 second.
Yeah.
Together.
We basically just were like, yes, absolutely, both of them. That was
so
the end of
doing that with him. And so we thought it would be a really interesting thing to get you ready for beer camp, but also to not to spoil anything, because we're going to be talking about media, I think, a lot more in that talk. But one of the things that I've been thinking about recently, and I was sort of talking to Christy about this, is this idea of legitimacy and humor.
Yes.
So even when I was at Edinburgh University, which is probably the most important school I'll ever go to in my career. Let's be real. But I was always incredibly sarcastic, and a lot of times it didn't go over well. Some people it went over fine with, some people not so much, because those places tend to lend themselves towards very serious people.
Very serious people.
And you have to like keep up this persona of seriousness. So like there was a couple professors that if I could get them to, I think I said this about Jorg as well, if I could get your Gregor, if I could get him to laugh or giggle, like I had really accomplished something.
Yeah.
But because I do practical theology alongside being funny, a lot of times you get seen, or you're seen, and then woman added to that, as being less legitimate. And so my question really was, what is the place of humor in the Academy? You know, we're talking about, we're going to beer camp, and then probably like a month later, we're going to AR Southeast, or sorry, not South of Jesus.
Big AR, yeah. Big AR in Boston, yeah.
That scared me.
I was like, that's not the paper I'm writing.
Right. Exactly. But we're expected to perform very different in these spaces. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the stuff that I do, I was saying, I had a friend who's at a big important university and was like, you know, Leah, we really want to get you in this big important university, but you need to write with the university press. And so I responded and I said, you know, my bad theology book actually got approached by a university press, or I got approached to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said no, because I didn't want the book to be expensive. One of the things about university presses is that they're prestigious, but their books are like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah.
My book right now is 25.
Yeah.
Like on multiple platforms. So it's like, you know, I said, I don't want to do that because I don't. And a lot of people are like, I think I've made a lot of choices that mean that I will never reach the higher echelons. But I think also it's like, yeah, where is the sort of humanity in academia?
Yeah, I think about it a lot because of the ways that people perceive me, obviously, because we're always at least a little bit narcissistic, you know.
I mean, I'm very humble. I'm the most humble.
I'm the humblest. I am the humblest. I tell my students this pretty regularly, that I'm their most humble professor.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, we're always thinking about how we're being perceived, right? And like, what are the ways that we put ourselves in the world? I talk about this a lot in terms of fashion and your like style, right? Like when my students in humanities, I tell them like how you dress every day for class tells me like a lot of things about you. And you may not have done that consciously, but it's still there, right? But one of the things that we do is
so girl who came to class in pajamas every day.
I mean, I did that in undergrad for sure, but
I made good grades, so I don't know what that says. It says I don't like mornings, probably.
But it's not just about how you dress, it's also about like your behaviors and things like that. And a lot of times I think there are a lot of different ways to talk about, and people have talked about all of the different ways that people, their attitudes are perceived, or like women are called bossy and men are called assertive or what have you. But one of the biggest ones, I think, is when you are kind of naturally, or you at least like put out there a sense of humor, like being funny and sarcastic or lighthearted, gets read almost all of the time as less serious, less intelligent, stupid, or like you aren't also doing important work. Like you're just the comedian, you're the jokester, whatever. And I think that we are missing so much opportunity and also just like badly perceiving people, because, you know, you're very funny, but you're also very intelligent. I am very funny, and I'm also very intelligent.
I didn't know if you were just doing the universal you or me specifically.
No, you specifically, but then also like me specifically. Look, yeah. I'm not going to
pretend. We're both so humble.
I know, humble and hilarious. And I mean, we put this out there a lot, but it's actually accurate, right? This is something that people have said to me for my whole life. We're very charming. Yes. Everybody loves us. Ryan Doe's, I want to tell you this. Ryan Doe's yesterday told me that you and I are the Mary and Pippin of the friend group. And
I honestly don't know what that means. And I've seen the movies and read the books.
Mary and Pippin, were the
comic relief.
Yeah, but I was like, I appreciate that.
But I want to be the Frodo too.
But also, yeah, like, and this is absolutely no, like, meaning to Ryan. I thought it was a sweet thing that he said.
It's sweet.
He followed it up with another something, and I can't remember that because I was very, like, but I love Merry and Pippin. And also in the books, Merry and Pippin save the day because they're the ones who go get the Ents. I am revealing more knowledge about Lord of the Rings than I'm currently comfortable with, people knowing that I know this.
Let me get on that podcast real quick.
I don't like that just happened. But like, I think that we need to understand, especially because there is an important aspect of comedy. Mark Twain is a famous author, famous satirist, but also like when you win comedy awards, they're called the Mark Twain Awards, right? Like we're not separating those things for him because we understand the ways they work together. And I think we need to be better specifically in the Academy at recognizing the way that humor could do important work.
Well, and I do think it's disarming to people.
And yeah.
They don't know what to do. Like in meetings, I remember I would be like, when I was head of department at one stage of theology, I would say like, okay, let's just adjourn this. This is getting stupid. Or like I put on the bottom of the agenda, and this is in Britain as well, which historically has a very different sense of humor to us.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be like, don't email me over Christmas. I'm not going to answer. Drink lots of eggnog. Have an actual good time, unless you don't drink, in which case, just have a good time.
Have a good time, yeah. Have a sober good time.
So, and I think, you know, it's, people read that, and part of it, they think that you're not a legitimate scholar, and I'm like, I wouldn't be here if I wasn't legitimate. I had to prove that first.
But right, now, like, we did that, but now...
Yeah, we've already done that, and I did that in the interview, and that's, you know, I was not silly. There's places for silliness. I wasn't silly in my interview. I wasn't just like, ooh, like, this is what I did, and then, like, shoot my finger guns in the air.
Right.
Because there is places for that. But I think, and there's certainly boundaries for humor as well, but I do think that, you know, the fact that people don't get taken seriously because they are funny is a real disservice, because the Academy needs humor.
It does.
Especially in these kind of dark times for academics. I think if you don't have that, like, you're really going to fold in on yourself. It's already a very isolated and individualistic place to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't have, I think humor connects people. And if you don't have that connection, then I don't think it's going to work out very well for you.
I agree. I also think that humor in specific can do really important things that serious work can't do. Like you said, it's disarming. And so it can reveal truth in a way that would normally make people defensive, right? Like if I need to, like Rocky Horror, like I need to show or mirror the kinds of bigotries that are going on, or the kinds of ways that, you know, the patriarchy is offensive or harms people or whatnot. And I just am constantly like, the patriarchy is terrible. And I'm just like very serious about it. People stop listening to you. But if you approach it with humor and you have a kind of Rocky Horror, Monty Python, various other great comedies that are out there, people are going to laugh and then reflect, you know, like,
it can be vessels of truth, just like anything else can be.
Yeah. Like
you might not joke about, but then, you know, there's some things that jokes can be a good vessel, even if it's really controversial. Like, I think they can, because you have to laugh but with the tears, kind of, you know, laugh or cry is really.
Yeah.
I watch The Daily Show all the time. And
love The Daily Show.
It's such a good satire, because it helps me, it almost helps me digest the news better than just reading the news.
Well,
I'm like, okay, you think this is insane too.
I think this is also really important, is because The Daily Show and Jimmy Kimmel and John Oliver are all three really honing in on a way of presenting the news that is both getting to more people and is really able to, like, again, in the humor, in the context of, they're all comedians, you know, is able to highlight how insane and absurd certain things are, right? And like if we are just being serious about everything, sometimes we aren't really getting at the actual truth of it too. Some of the things that are happening are absurd, and we need to call them absurd because it also kind of helps remove a fear of it. Like, oh, I'm afraid. It's like Portland. Like, here, you know, Portland's not at war because, and we can see it because, A, Portland was never at war, but like also,
it's the hippiest, dippiest.
When you have people showing up in blow up Halloween costumes to protest and stuff, it makes it all much more like noticeably absurd. You're like, nope, this is, it shouldn't be happening. All of this shouldn't be happening. And we can now more clearly see that because of the humor that has been brought into it, you know?
And it can show, yeah, it can express it in a way that people get when you highlight the absurdity. Like last night on The Daily Show, there was, our president keeps talking about dying. It's true. I'm going to put the clip up so you guys know I'm not making this up if you've not seen it. But he seems really, really intent on talking about, like...
He does. His legacy? Heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But also now it's moved past legacy to, like, getting to heaven. So God. I don't know if he's sick or something, but he's really into it. So they said, and now we have our correspondent from heaven, so-and-so, so-and-so. And he's in heaven. And then he's like, you know, is our president on his way to going to heaven? And he said, well, you know, does he still eat the shrimp? And he was like, well, I don't know about that. And they're like, well, that's kind of the thing, is the shrimp thing. Like, that's...
It's the shrimp thing.
And he was like, they asked something, they're like, is Hitler in heaven? Well, he didn't eat shrimp. So, and of course, this is all insane. Right, yeah. It's absurd.
It's insane.
But they're making fun of the fact that people pick and choose stuff out of the. It's theological in the sense that people pick and choose out of the text, and they just pick the shrimp thing.
The shrimp thing, I love it. Well, it's like the good.
Talk about the shrimp thing for a long time.
Fantastic. It's like The Good Place. I mean, The Good Place did an incredible job of teaching philosophy and worldview and all this, and it did it through hilariousness, like. I show clips of The Good Place when I have to teach philosophy because I'm like, why would you want to listen to me talk about Aristotle when you could actually listen to Chidi, who is teaching it well, but also it's funny. And you're going to, it's like, oh my God, my favorite YouTube video, which I send.
Father Ted had a lot of theology in it. The Vicar of Dibley. I brought this up before. Sorry, I cut you off about the YouTube.
That's okay.
The UK has an excellent, excellent means of portraying the church in a comedic way that we simply can't touch in the U.S. for reasons. Well, a bunch of people get hurt. You've got Vicar of Dibley. You've got Rev. You've got Fleabag. You've got Father Ted. These are all church stuff, church-related comedies, and they are absolutely amazing.
They're amazing. There's this video, and I've looked at the rest of since the YouTube channel's videos, and I'm not going to recommend the whole channel, but there's one video on the Trinity, and it's these two little Irishmen talking to St. Patrick, and it is hilarious. He's like, but also,
this is also made up.
It's actually really good, like, at teaching students the Trinity. And so whenever I would teach the Trinity when I was doing systematic theology, I would show that video. And 90% of the time, I'm not making this up, my students would quote, they would just write down the quotes from the video on their tests. It'd be like, and I'd get a lot of, like, they would remember it and they would tell me ages later. And then sometimes I was teaching online while I was in my doctoral program, and a student would email me and they would say, I'm just really having a hard time understanding the Trinity. And I would say, I recognize that this video is going to seem silly, but it will help. And they would write back and they would be like, that actually was really helpful. And I'm like, yeah, it's funny, but it's like, you're getting it, right? Like,
what's like when Marcella wrote the Queer God, and she was talking to about how absurd a lot of theology is. Because if you think about, and I pick on Christy about the Trinity, but the Trinity doesn't make sense. Like, it
does not. No, it doesn't.
Because if you look at the history, there's reasons there's people didn't want to be polytheistic and all sort of stuff. So there's history to it. But also, not just that, there's other theological concepts that are just wild. We kind of hinted about it last week, but the fact that, or 1 week recently, you know, God knocks up a woman.
Yeah. You know, the biblical description of an angel is both terrifying and actually kind of hilarious. Like,
God talks through a donkey.
God talks through a donkey. Also, it is objectively hilarious that one time when Paul is preaching, a man falls asleep and falls out the window and dies because it's so boring. Like, it's funny. It's funny that that's in there.
Don't feel bad about yourself. Just know.
Just know that Paul killed somebody by being too boring. They brought him back to life. He was fine, but but it's funny. And this is
the other thing. Had those powers to do that.
Do you know who was funny? And like, this is actually in the text, is Jesus. Like, the fact that they kept saying that he was a drunkard and a glutton is really just them saying that he was hilarious and not serious. And also, a platypus exists. And so, there's just like objective. There's
birds that can't really walk very well, that are on all ice, and also can't fly.
Also, let's talk about our collective.
They're supposed to have evolved, and I believe in evolution, but they're supposed to have evolved to.
They evolved to this, though. That. This is what they evolved to.
To a flightless ice bird who can barely walk.
Yep. They waddle. They're adorable.
And what it can do is swim well, except for the fact that there are things that want to eat it.
Yeah, in the water.
In the water, actively.
Yeah.
And it wants to have babies. It walks. You all watch March of the Penguins. I just age myself. It has to walk.
My God, that video is, that movie, I saw it in a theater. That was the wrong choice.
They walk for forever. And they evolved. This was supposed to make their life easier.
This was the best choice. Let's talk about our collective animals. Penny is so ridiculous. She shit when Beethoven approached her. I just feel like it is important for us to recognize
when it's hot outside.
And he lives in North Carolina.
It's gonna be a long life.
It's gonna be a long life for that boy. It's just like it's important for us to recognize the way that humor isn't just a part of every day, but also is like actually essential to survival. This is the other thing. I feel like one of the kind of downfalls of our current time, right?
You're using your words real carefully
there. Well, no, because you know why? Because it's not just one set of people. It's a lot of people on all forms. Is that we get so hyper fixated on we need to know what's going on in the news and we need to know all of the ins and outs. And it, you know, if we're not talking about Gaza or, you know, the issues in the United States and the ways that we're just like a fascist country at this point, all of those kinds of things, then we're somehow failing as humans. But like, that will burn us out immediately. And one of the things that I appreciate a lot of things about Black theology, but one of the things I appreciate so much is whenever they talk about Black joy and like just the very kind of mundane aspects that can come along that should be highlighted as like, you know, like we're being joyful in this moment, we're choosing joy. And if Black people can choose to be joyful, I think we should all choose to be joyful because,
yeah, I mean,
like they've had a lot thrown at them for centuries.
So like, and I'm in no way comparing in no way except for
no
church experience is that I went to church every day, I went to church every week of week of my life up until I was 18. And you know the bits that I thank you serve us with a
smile. Did you get a new not disgusting drink?
I did. I pivoted.
I'm almost done, and then I have another drink waiting for me.
But I already have. I already have.
No, I have. I brought
have a hangover helper, so I'm okay.
I brought a second drink over because I was like, I'm gonna need a chaser after this horror is done.
But I remember, you know how many sermons I remember? Zero.
Zero.
You know what I do remember is laughing at potlucks afterwards. I remember being in a production of with my youth group. We like sheep, bah, we like sheep, bah, bah, we like sheep. Sheep is what we are. Why do I still have this song about it? Because sheep is what we are. We think that they're best by far. We like sheep. So yes, that part I remember. Now, sermon, seriousness, not a single bit.
No.
And it's interesting that like with I show clips from Rev, which is a really good show. You if you've not seen it, it's got Olivia Colman. It's got dude that was in not the new Pride and Prejudice, but the old one. I can't remember.
Colin Firth.
Or maybe no, he was in the new one. He plays the
Matthew
minister,
McFadden.
maybe.
Oh, the minister.
Yeah.
That little guy. I don't know his
Yeah.
name.
He's the Rev.
The boiled potatoes.
The boiled
These are
potatoes. They
excellent
are
boiled
excellent.
potatoes.
Yes. So he plays this vicar. He's in the Church of England, and
Fantastic.
he moves from a rural place to the city of London, and he deals with all of the stuff there. But he actually is like he really believes in it. His wife is a lawyer, Olivia, played by Olivia Colman, and the incredible Olivia Colman. And the show is just it deals a lot with theological issues, but it's a comedy. So like I show depending on the class, but there's two ones that I love to play. One is they are no one. Christy might die from this drink. She might actually die. One is that his Church of England numbers are down in his church because it's so boring. So they bring in a like a mega church dude and into the church to make the numbers go up. And he puts up like a smoothie bar, and it's all very funny. So I show it to my like my church people. But then there's also this one where he's laying on the couch and he's like drunk with like his hand down his pants, like watching a movie show. And Olivia Colman comes in and is like, "Are you still having a crisis of faith?" And he's like, Yeah, I am. I'm not sure about the whole thing." And she's like, "Okay, well, when you get over that, just let me know, and we can go out and do some stuff. I got some," because she knows he's not gonna actually leave the church, but she's like letting him have his moment of like, but it's hilarious. And I think for me, like shows like that using humor, like is so much better than some dude standing at a pulpit being like, "Well, if you have a crisis of faith, like, or if you don't believe anymore, just know that it just takes a little bit of time." No, I need Olivia Colman to tell me while I'm laying on the couch watching reality TV drunk with my hands down my pants that whenever I get over it, let her know.
Oh my God, if Olivia Colman ever said that to me,
She's
I
an
would die and
amazing
go to heaven
witch.
immediately. She's the best.
She is
Like,
truly the best.
I love her. I need this to happen. I think that there's something important to be said for the fact that we have for centuries had humor as a way to understand and cope with the absurdity of life. Life is absurd, and coping with it by just being serious all of the time will make you age miserably.
Well, and that's I'm quite I can self-admittedly be quite cynical sometimes. I think that it's from being Southern. It gives us humor and cynicism in equal doses. But I think like Christy, I felt I had watched the format the other night and was doing like this critique, and then all of a sudden I felt bad about it because I was like, she's just finding joy in this. Like, just let her be joyful about it. Like, it's not, you know.
Happy.
I know, and I know that I didn't affect that happiness at all. But I had a moment where I self-check about that sort of stuff, where I'm just like, you know what? Someone's ever they the young kids don't ick someone's yum or whatever. Like, just let.
Yes, don't ick someone's yum. And like sometimes we need to. Yuck, some
Well,
I
I
don't.
was telling you what I really thought, but then I realized that like it
I'm not the
doesn't.
person you need to do that
I'm
to.
not. I would tell Stuart. We like it
Also, I
doesn't
don't,
matter.
I mean, as I've said.
Like, if you hate Taylor Swift's new album, that's okay. Because I've got it on my running playlist right now. I'm gonna bop out
You
to it.
are allowed to bop out to it.
And I'm going to, but I think it's just one of those things where I
I
started to
plan on
realize,
never
like,
listening to it, but it's fine.
no, and you don't have, this is what it is about being 43, adult person.
Is
You
you
don't
don't
have
have
to.
to, but you don't have to like, I think recognizing
My
the
point in all of
ways.
that was that we are allowed to have joy.
Yeah, you're
If
allowed
you
to have
like my
joy.
mom, that's cool.
Recognizing the ways that joy can be a way to both help you cope, a way to teach, And also, again, I have to stress, it is actually like a survival need. Mm. We need to have joy, because if we are just angry and bitter and serious all of the time and saying that the only things that matter are serious things, right? Like, where do you find love in any of that? Because love is not coming from anger. Anger can happen with love. Like, if I love something and something is hurting the thing, righteous anger happens, and that's good.
That was really good timing, actually.
Really good timing.
Penny doesn't ever. Penny's anger is not righteous.
Hey, come here. Come sit with me. It's just our nice neighbors that she likes.
I suppose it's righteous in the sense she wants to protect you, but
she, yes, tiny dogs have big feelings. Yes, we do.
Meanwhile, Zero's like do 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 do.
But like, anger and seriousness have their places. But when we're talking about love, we are not talking about anger or seriousness. We're talking about joy and happiness. And if you love something, you have to be able to find those things. And humor helps us with that, because it reminds us of how important it is. I'm not making this up. This is a real thing. My favorite Shakespeare sonnet is, I know.
I just shook my head.
Leah immediately disapproved of this, but
I just don't know them, so you can tell me anything.
I never remember which number it is, but it goes, my mistress's eyes are nothing like the sun. And then it immediately lists off, like, her hair is like coarse wire, and her breasts are not snowy pillows. They're more like heaving dun or something. And it's really funny, though. And what he's doing with it is saying, like, I don't love a fake person. Like, he says, like, nobody's lips are the color of roses. Nobody's hair is the color of sunshine. You know, like, all these things. Those things are fake. Those are not real aspects of love. My love is real because my mistress is real. She's a real person. Who he even at some point says that her breath stinks. But it's really funny. it's a funny, like, I have real love for this thing and I'm displaying it in this humorous way. And it's just a lovely moment.
The other day I was just like,
and I make my students read it every semester.
it was 2 days ago and it was that time of the month and I was like kind of going crazy at Stuart, and my face was all like zitted out, and I was in this trash bag clothes, and I just went, look at me, just look at me.
But see, like, in that moment,
I am, you're fine. And I was like,
I'm a trash bag.
I've like, popped off one of my nails, I haven't showered, and I was like, look at me. And he was like, girl, I am, and I know.
And he still loves you.
He does.
This is like, if he was just like serious, like, yes, you do look like trash. That's not good, right? No, we're finding the humor. We're finding the joy and the humor.
Well, he did start giggling because I kept naming things that were wrong with me. I was like, this shirt doesn't fit. I'm getting fat. I've got sweatpants. I popped a nail. It was like a manifesto of like all the crazy, and he just was like, and you know what, I'm still here.
Yep. And also, like, and I think this is partly what Shakespeare is also getting across, is like, he doesn't love you, or / Shakespeare doesn't love his mistress based on fake things. He's like, actually, because of all of these, you are a real person, and I love all of these things also.
It's shaky being all sweet.
Billy Shakes. That's what I like to call him when I teach about it.
I think, also, Christy and I laugh a lot, and I think it's funny.
I also want you guys to know that.
Something about one of the Beer Camp boys was like, do y'all really laugh that much in real life? Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of. you to know that these jokes that I'm telling you I say to my students are real things that I say to my students.
They think you're lame, and I.
They do. They fake laugh at me, but they appreciate it.
I don't know about that, but I. I think you're funny, so it's fine.
A couple of my students.
As the years grow between the generation we teach and us, the jokes get worse and worse and worse. And I'm beginning to realize we are now that teacher that we made fun of.
Oh, for sure.
Weird jokes.
For sure.
I saw a thing with Matthew McConaughey that was talking about what does it mean to be Southern. And to be honest, I mean, he's from Texas, which is not really the South, I would argue. But he also sounds the most Southern of any human alive.
I was going to say, if anyone is going to talk about it, though, it's Matthew McConaughey.
I mean, Southwest is fine. We can debate it. Whatever. But he was saying that he talked about the humor. And, I think Mark Twain's trying to tell you something really important about the state of the South with his... I mean, he's not even from the South, but he was trying to tell you... I think he's from the North. I'm pretty sure. He was a ferryman. I know that.
He moved to the South?
I'm pretty sure. Google machine. Madonna, I don't need the haters. I'm about to tell a story. I'm pretty sure he was a ferryman, but I think he moved to, like, Louisiana, Mississippi from the North.
Okay. You keep telling.
The point being is that his style of storytelling is very within the realm of Southern storytelling. And when he writes the stuff about Mark Twain, he is trying to tell you a story about the state of the South in terms of racism, in terms of how we treat people, and all of this other kinds of stuff. So he is, but he's using humor as a means and satire as a means to do that. And I think what Matthew McConaughey says in this is that because things have been so economically bad, but also because of racism and slavery and all of the stuff, the baggage that Southern states have had to deal with, a lot of their own, they did it to themselves kind of thing, but we carry it generations on, is that they used humor and storytelling and music as a means of sort of getting through that as an escape. But also to tell a story that, like, you know, needs to be told, but you're almost too prideful, because that's the one thing, being Southern, you're raised to be polite, prideful, and really those two things, polite and prideful. So I think he's saying, we, in order to be polite and prideful, but you want to tell a story that's really kind of hard to tell, then you make it a comedy, because it saves the pride. But if you can, or you make it a satire, so if you can see through that pride, then and sort of patriotism, then you can see that there is a story to be told. And I think a lot of the great Southern writers like Tennessee Williams, Flannery O'Connor, Mark Twain, they wrote like that. They were telling you a story.
Yeah.
That was bad.
Yeah.
They were trying to do it within the confines of that society. And so they used, satire and humor. Was he Northern?
So it's a controversial. He's from Missouri.
He was from where?
Missouri.
Yeah. So he's Northern.
So this is why it's so controversial. Like, because if you're Northern, that's the South, but if you're Southern, it's not.
I mean, really, it's the Midwest. He's from
the Midwest, but he's from Missouri. Then
he moved down.
Yeah, and it got too long, so I stopped reading.
That was the big part. As soon as I said that, anytime I'm really wrong, Christy does this with, like, big eyes, and I'm like, I'm sure I heard that on that Rich Hall.
Well, I was like, I mean, I like Mark Twain a lot, but I'm not an expert in Mark Twain. And I was just like, but he's a Southern writer. Like, that's...
I mean, I think he was...
Technically, is, but...
If you believe, we've been to Missouri for beer camp. Beer camp really takes us to some exotic places.
Beer camp? Some places that I never planned on going, but
there we are. There we are. Yeah, I mean, I think Missouri's Midwest. Like, I mean, they're in the Southeastern Conference, which caused a lot of hoo-ha at the time. But
I think it depends on who you are, what you think Missouri is, and
is it not right there in the middle?
I think it's the Midwest. I'm with you.
I've
driven through it a lot. So, and also my grandfather is from Missouri.
Okay.
Missouri is what he calls it. Missouri, and he said Warsh.
Okay. Well, it is the Ozarks. I think the Ozarks make it.
The Ozarks. Well, that's where he's from, is the Ozarks.
Because if you watch Jennifer Lawrence in that film, you're like, oh, Okay, so we'll give it a southern card for today, but he
Yeah.
definitely, let's
I
say
mean,
he moved to the deep south.
he moved into the Deep South, and then he wrote mostly about the Deep South. But technically, yes. Which is a very interesting new way to read his books with this knowledge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I, again, that's not my.
He saw a story that he wanted to tell, and he was like, but the only way to do it is to
Yeah, absolutely.
experience it. And so he
Yeah.
went and experienced it, and then he.
Well, and then he said, like, the way I have to tell this is through satire and through humor. And because you have to be able to have a sense of humor about some really dark things. Because again, if you just try to be serious all the time, people will get defensive.
And I think people wouldn't have listened. They listen now to his story, although I think he's banned now because of language. But people listen to his story in that context that would never have listened to his story otherwise.
Add him to the list.
Yeah, he gets added to the ban, but and especially in that needed to hear the story, I think heard it one because he was a southerner in the sense of living near, and then also like that he was writing in the way that didn't. I think the thing with speaking about Southerners specific is you can't hurt their feelings too much. Like that's the thing is they're quite a prideful group. So you've got to kind of introduce, and that's what humor does. And I think a lot of times, you know, I've increasingly been writing less systematic theology, more accessible theology, which is going to put me in a category where no university press is going to want to publish my books, even if they are good, but people want to read them. And I think I'm getting to realize that much like Mark Twain, she says, I want people
But it's
to be
true.
able to understand what I'm saying and to listen to what I'm saying. And if you write this big, heady book, you know, people like are not going to, they're the general population is one, not going to listen and also not going to understand. And that's where humor comes in and where these things come in. And
Yeah.
I think that's a real being able to translate to different audiences is a teacher trait, but it's also something that I think is an overlooked academic trait.
I agree completely. Well, and I honestly, if we're being very frank, being a good teacher is not typically something that elite academics care about.
They don't.
The teaching part is the secondary part.
Cut it to one, Christy. I need you to just. Like hold that in your soul. A two, that means two classes, one semester,
Right?
one of the
Class
other.
was. I need you to know that I can't even fathom, like, the way that this does not translate, because I've always been at teaching universities and I've always had to, and I have always said this too. When I was doing my PhD work, I said, I want to be in the classroom. I like teaching. I don't want to just be locked away with books. And much as I love books, and I do, and much as I like doing research and all that, but I find that the thing that inspires me to do research is being with the students, talking with them. That helps, you know, but it also means that, yeah, I have to prioritize, or I'm always going to prioritize, like, how do I make this accessible? How do I make my students listen to a whole lecture? You know, how do I get them to engage with the material? And I'm here to tell you that, as lame as my jokes are, they're at least paying attention. You know, like, they're not skipping. Or, I mean, a lot of them skip, let's be honest, but, like,
Oh, we did
you
too.
know,
We did too.
it's a very different kind of situation, especially when you're trying to reach more people and not just people who can't afford to attend Ivy League institutions, because then you're really talking to a small audience there.
And I think that you and I are very similar in that way. Like a lot of people, as I made choices throughout my career, were like, "What are you doing? Where are you doing?" Well, what I'm doing is that I'm from Georgia, from two parents who didn't finish college, and I'm going back to talk to those people about the things, you know,
Yeah.
that I think need to change. And this whole big flashy and big thing and all this doesn't have anything to do with what my original mission was, which was to talk to people about this stuff. And as I've worked through the years, you know, and part of that though is understanding how people work and how humor works and not just rocking up to places and being like, well, let me talk to you about this heady systematic stuff. Like it's not going to work that way. That's not how change happens. And that was something that I wanted to happen very actively. So, you know, we're my dad taught me charm and extroversion and cynicism but using the cynicism as humorous, like,
yeah,
because yeah. I think the reflective, we're both very reflective, and I think to be like, you know, I'm the cynical one. I don't know which out of Mary and Pippin is the more cynical one, but I would be
that. I sure don't know. They were very
cynical. About the Ents. How can
I
you
knew
not
about
know
the
about
Ents.
This?
Mary and Pippin went and they got the Ents to move, which is very slow.
A lovely compliment.
And
boy,
there was
I want to be that hot. I want to be Liv Tyler, to be fair, because she gets to marry Aragorn.
I was very happy with it. Then he followed it up with that we're also something else. That
you're not doing justice to our beloved Ryan right now.
Ryan, we appreciate the compliment, but I think that he was like, oh, don't, you know, you're not just funny, humorous side characters, and like followed it up. And I was like,
Ryan is our mascot for this entire episode. Then
he really is.
Because he got it. He got it.
He stands up.
He's also married, so he got it. That's how
it is. Yeah. Ryan is our boy. I feel like it's important, and especially again, it's something that you and I hear a lot, but also have to fight against, because there's a inherent assumption that because we're funny, we're not something else.
That's insane because
I'm just here to say that that's not true. We are all the things.
But we are open, humble amongst them.
Humble.
We are all the things Shakespeare did not mean in that thing. We have great
boobs. My eyes are like the sun.
My boobs are fantastic.
They are fantastic. My hair.
And we brush regularly. Like,
my breath smells great. I will say that.
After that Aperol or whatever, it's
probably not right at this moment. Because, yeah, that drink.
Maybe killed off anything in your mouth.
That's true. There's no bacteria left.
But yeah, so I think we need to bring back the humor. We need to bring back, again, knowing you can know where humor may lie, but like, you know, I appreciate these sort of, and you have to be smart to be humorous. That's the thing, is like, you see people who make stupid jokes or are not really good at those jokes, and those might hit for some people, but you know, we may have to elevate our humor, hence our podcast called Theology on the Rocks. The idea that you can learn from humor is absolutely valid. And, you know, I need someone to write just a really absurd theology book that uses that. Have you had one that's just like off the rails?
An off the rails theology book? God, no, they're all
actually an academic publisher.
Right? I was going to say no. Can you imagine what academic publisher? This is what we should strive for.
Maybe Tom.
It's published.
We can get. I'm saying this not because I'm nervous. I'm saying because Tom owes us one, because nothing. We owe him a million because he went on.
We owe him things, but I will say that Tom, we're pitching this to you.
Tom, we're pitching an idea. Let us.
We want to write a theology and humor. It's gonna happen.
I was like looking at all of my stuff. Is deeply serious.
I know. I'm like, what? What? Literally, theologian. I one time heard Oliver Crisp make a joke at AAR, and a lady got mad. And then Oliver Crisp, for those of you who don't know, is very British. He's a systematic theologian. He's at St. Andrews. He's incredible and like the most epitome of a British academic. And he made a joke and a lady in the audience got pissed about it. And then he said in his British accent, oh, yes, very serious. And it was amazing. It was amazing. I cracked up.
My version is... John Swinton, if you know, he's a practical theologian at Aberdeen, and I love him because maybe this is also a part of it. He was a nurse prior to getting in academia, like a medical nurse, and he cracks me up.
Yeah,
like no academic can, and yet he is like an OBE, like he is.
Yeah,
like all the things. Like
when you find the ones that are funny, It's like finding a unicorn, honestly.
Truly.
It's amazing. It makes my day when you find the funny theologians. I know I've known a few. They're very few and far between, but I've known a few, and it is the best. Like, immediately you're like, I don't even care if I agree with you. I will read all of your books.
I remember when I first met him, he came down to Glasgow. I was at Glasgow at the time. And he showed up and he was in the midst of like me and Heather and Doug, Heather Walton, Doug Gay, all practical theologians. And he's a practical theologian too. And we were sat around and he just like cracked a joke. And I was like, oh my gosh. Because I was a postdoc. I was just like taking minutes, just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, how can I please you all? And then he just made a joke and I just like put the pen down. And I was like, yes.
Yes.
Like, yep. Thank God this person is.
But if you ever, if you've ever heard me go, oh yes, they're serious, I'm literally quoting Oliver Crisp. It's evoking. it's actually on video. There's a YouTube. They recorded the whole session and put it on YouTube. And my students at the time had found it and they were like, we found you in the audience. But I was like, just fast forward to the Q&A and when he says this to that lady, because it's priceless, that moment.
The story I repeat often about getting asked if I was a communist, I did start laughing during that real hard. Yeah. Research seminar and got asked if I was presenting a paper on bad theology actually, and if I was a communist, and I was like, what? as someone who presents a lot, you're taught to kind of pivot around questions but I just mm-hmm. went, what? And then I started laughing.
I feel like that's the best response.
Well, I just was like,
because
around us, I was at Edinburgh, I was like, am I? No, I'm not.
Also, who's asking that in good faith? No one is asking you that in good faith. That's not what's happening there.
They sure weren't.
No, never is.
They're at Oxford now, so it's fine.
Okay, well, for more humor, join us at Theology on the Rocks. Theology
Beer Camp.
Beer Camp, Theology Beer Camp.
Watch us do the Hot Ones challenge.
Hot Ones will be on the YouTube as per usual.
Yep.
We will also have our humor session with Rolf, which I'm super excited about.
That we've chatted about it, I'm like,
yeah,
this is like a good warmer of our ideas.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel ready. I feel prepared. It's going to be a rocking good time.
Because I think and this is the benefit too, you know, your aunties always like to give you advice. This is a good thing about talking through ideas with someone
mm-hmm.
before you do something, whether it's presenting or writing, is it
always,
the juice is and Christy and I will probably repeat ourselves in that particular session that
for you sure.
heard here for sure. But at least it's there.
And it'll be like more it'll be better because we will have.
We'll have more drinks, probably.
But we will have thought about it even more, you know. Mm-hmm. We'll be bouncing off of a new person as well. So like, it's just always.
I'm excited to meet.
Theology is a best friend. Yeah. Oh, me too.
Were you going to say theology what?
Theology is a conversation. You should never think about theology as like an isolated thing. You're always in conversation with other people.
And maybe that's a good way to kind of end it, because I feel like humor needs that community.
Yeah.
Like oftentimes like academia isolates you and like,
yeah,
it's not a conversation anymore.
But you should be in conversation. You should be talking with people alive and dead, but like talking with them, not just like arguing or
nine.
Building off or nine, like it should be like, okay, let me balance some things, you know. Yeah.
I agree. Well guys,
see, well, there we go,
camp hopefully this weekend.
Yep. And then book club is on the 22nd.
Yep.
We're reading Boy Erased. I'm putting it on the Patreon tonight.
It's real perky. It's the opposite.
It's the opposite of We also have November's book already set, so that will be announced soon. We've got November's date set, so that will be announced soon as well. So, like, all of
this. Because we're doing Lord of the Flies.
We're doing Lord of the Flies for November. It's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be.
Stuart's choice.
Yeah, Stuart chose.
He did.
Stuart.
He wanted to read that one. And I honestly haven't.
It's been too
long. I was going to say, that's like 1984. It's been a min.
It's been a long time, and it's one that I need to reread. So
it may have been high school for me, to be fair.
It was high school when I read it. Yeah.
We are having our 25th school anniversary this year, because I was class of 2000.
Well, good.
It's beer camp weekend. So I'm
not so you're not going? No. Would you have gone?
Class secretary, what?
Would you have gone?
Or maybe.
Maybe, okay.
I didn't have a bad time in high school. Some people
have. You ever been to a reunion?
I have not, because I was overseas for all the rest of them, for the most part. I just feel like I kept up with the people that.
This is kind of how I feel. I haven't been to any. I wanted to go to my 5-year reunion, but it was on the day after Thanksgiving and I couldn't afford the flight. But every other one that we've had, I have not gone. And in large part because the people that I keep up with are the people that I want to keep up with.
What I will say is it's like.
Nothing against my high school friends. If any of you are listening to this, I zero of my high school classmates listen to this. It's fine. But
One of mine does. My best friend from high school, Bobby. Shout out to Bobby.
maybe my best friend listens to us. Actually, I don't know if she does or not. She hasn't actually told me.
She does. Bobby does listen. So
Bobby
she.
listens to us.
Bobby
You've
listens to us.
got one. Okay.
Yep. So we got one. And so, but it's here's one thing I would love to show Stuart because it's in our cafeteria is where the whole thing is. I'd like to go back to the high school. It's been 25 years since I've been there. So like, and then there's a homecoming like football game,
Okay.
and that would be fun
Yeah.
to just to show him like
To show him high school. Yeah.
show him high school because he doesn't
He
he didn't
didn't.
go to
Yeah.
American high school. Also,
Yeah.
my high school's is was massive, so I think.
Yeah. None of these things would be true for mine, but maybe I could finally get signatures in my yearbook.
Do you not have any?
No, because they gave it to us in October of our freshman year of
Oh my God, we
college.
gotta post pictures of the yearbook.
The yearbook, you guys. Oh, it is.
Oh, I really want to emphasize that I went to school in Ringgold, Georgia,
Oh,
which is North Georgia, the hills of Appalachia, as I've always said. It is, and we're gonna compare covers. Christy went to high school in Ohio.
hi.
Dear Jesus, y'all are gonna die. It's shocking.
Every time I say to somebody, I need you to prepare yourself, and they think I'm
She
joking, and
showed it
then
to
they
me when I was in Tampa and I almost died. Then she showed it to our Catholic friend from Scotland and she almost died.
She almost died. I'm telling you, it's the worst high school yearbook cover. And none of the rest of our covers, like all of my other high school yearbooks, which I have upstairs, normal covers.
Something happened. So
My
she was on
senior
our
year,
yearbook committee. God.
somebody did some acid and
And then
then was like, this picture.
came to the Lord and took acid at the same time. Meanwhile, mine just like, this is where you went to school.
No. Yeah, it's a good time showing people that cover.
Y2K year two. It was something. Year to remember. Year to that's not Y, that's not K. Anyway, that's all that mine is, but Christie's is an absolute and you will know immediately whose is who when you see it.
You will. You will. You will. Because it is. Woo! All right.
All right, friends, see you this weekend.
See you this weekend. But it's next week. Well, next weekend, but
Next
close
week.
enough.
Yeah, fair enough. See you
Yeah.
then.
Bye.
Bring your parka.